KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
If you go to the popular Zoo Light celebration at the Oregon Zoo, you might notice a massive polar bear sculpture. It's beautiful white twinkling in the darkness, but look closer and horror sets in. You realize it's made of trash collected from our coastline. It's one of the celebrated creations of Oregon artist Angela Hazelton Potsey, who joins us live right now. Welcome, Angela.
Hi there. Welcome. Thank you.
Let's focus first on Daisy the polar bear. How did you create her, and what does she represent?
Well, Daisy is one of our many, many sculptures with the Washed Ashore Project, and she's made of marine debris that has been collected along the Oregon coast, and it could be any coast anywhere. We just happen to be located in Oregon, and it's made with, oh boy, the whole idea of our sculptures is really to grab people's attention with animals that are represented of the ones that are being endangered by plastic pollution in the ocean. And she's sitting on a melting iceberg that is all made with plastic bottles and all kinds of things that we've, cooler lids and everything that is washed up on the beaches. And we don't color or dye anything. It's just the colors we pick up. And I say we because we're an organization that depends on volunteers, and I also have a great staff, and we all work together to make these sculptures.
Hi, Angela. Althea Billings here. So you're the founder and artistic director of the Washed Ashore Project. Can you tell us about how that came about?
Yes. We're almost 10 years old as of next month. We will turn 10 as a nonprofit. And it's really a very personal story on my part, in that I grew up in a family of artists. Both my parents were artists, and I married Craig Potsey, who also taught at Portland State University there, and was an art teacher in Portland, and helped start the Buckman Magnet Art School in VSAA as an art teacher. So I was rooted in the arts and education, and I was also an exhibiting artist in the Portland area. And then my dear husband of 25 years died of a brain tumor, and it was rather sudden, and they had a stroke. My whole life was upside down, and I didn't know what to do with my life, and I thought, well, I have to run away to the ocean, because the ocean will be my place that I can count on, that it's never changed. It'll be my place of solace that I can pull my life back together. And I was walking the beaches every day, and moved down to Bandon, Oregon, where my family's had a cabin and my grandparents were from. And basically, I was walking the ocean, and I came to the ocean to heal, and really I found an ocean that needed healing. I saw plastic as far as I could see on the beaches and was horrified. And I've always loved Oregon beaches, and I had to figure out what to do to change that. And what I could do is I thought, well, I believe in the power of the arts. I believe that arts are a powerful language, and they can grab people's hearts and minds and turn them around. And so I figured it out and figured I would make giant animals that would make people want their picture taken next to it, and they'd want to go look at it. And then they'd find out what it's made of, and they'd want to stop polluting the oceans and change their consumer habits. We now have a staff of 10 and thousands of volunteers that work with us in Bandon. That's how it started. It was a very personal awakening, really.
You just mentioned the consumer habits, and this time of year that takes on special meaning during the holidays. What's your message about all this conspicuous consumption and all the trash that we're creating right now?
Yeah, I think sometimes people just kind of set all that stuff aside when they get seduced by the colorful gifts that they want to buy. And, you know, we were sold the whole idea that, you know, plastic is convenient, it's cheap, it's beautiful, it's slick, it's colorful. It comes in every color and everything we've ever wanted, and that's why we have the problem we have with plastic pollution. There's so much of it, and we don't even know it's plastic some of the times when we buy things. We don't even think about it. This is the time of year to really stop and stop in your tracks before you go grab something off a shelf and think about it. You know, can I find a different product that doesn't have plastic in it? Can I avoid the plastic packaging? Can I, of course, you can easily not put it in a plastic bag, and Portland makes that even easier. Thank you very much. But, you know, I think if we stop ourselves and look at what we're buying, we can make better choices. And really, I often tell people if the next present you buy for somebody, if it's, you know, during the school year when it's a kid and you're thinking about a present for at a party or something, I mean, try to have no plastic associated with it. And it's a challenge. But you'll find you'll buy more things locally. You won't be ordering things in the mail that have to come in plastic packaging. You won't be getting something off a shelf, but you'll be maybe supporting local artists. And you can get something made of wood or paper or cotton fabric or stone or ceramic or something else. And it doesn't take much to just rewire your brain about that. And it's a great time of the year to really test yourself on that. You know, and then there's, of course, the wrapping paper. You know, even if you do paper wrapping, at least you can reuse that and put it in your fireplace if you're building a Christmas fire or something. But, you know, try to avoid the foil wrap or the plastic string and all that sort of stuff.
And so are the sculptures made entirely from trash found discarded on Oregon beaches?
They are, and we have processed about 28 tons of garbage off of Oregon beaches into over 80 sculptures at this point. And we tour those all around the country. So we're really excited because in January 24th, we will have our first show at the Oregon Zoo. So we have Daisy the polar bear kind of there as a teaser, but she's about to be joined by a lot of other big animals to educate people more about the subject. So they'll be sprinkled out throughout the zoo coming January. And that's a six-month show, so it'll be there. Actually, longer than 6 months. I think it's an eight-month show, yeah. So it'll be there through the whole summer.
Wow, congratulations. Now, you've also had your work displayed at the Smithsonian, both at the National Zoo and the Museum of Natural History. What was that experience like as an artist?
Well, it's a huge honor. I mean, it's just an amazing honor. I was asked by the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History to create a display. It's in a display case in the Sant Ocean Hall. It's been there for over 3.5 years, and it is a turtle swimming through a sea with jellyfish and such. And it was, I mean, it, I was really nervous. That piece. We always have volunteers work on everything, but that one I thought, you know, I just need to do this myself because I'm going to be too picky. But it was also really important because I'd get so involved in the details of doing all the fine work, and I'd like, no, this has to teach. It has to teach. So that's the one trick about our work. You want it to be a work of art that is, you know, beautiful, but we have to have that horrifying edge to it of, oh my God, this is plastic I recognize. There's a lighter, there's a, you know, a shovel, there's a, you know, a fork, there's a water bottle. We have to actually have things people see and can take ownership of that they're part of the issue, because all this stuff was once purchased by somebody. We all buy this all the time, and we need to remember we're part of the issue. Every human is.
I am very interested in the fact that you're saying that there's a certain level that you don't want to camouflage what your materials are. Are there sorts of materials that work better for your sculpture style?
Well, you know, it's interesting. When I first started this, I really want to show everything that's on the beach. So I had to design things that where I could use like 95% of everything that comes in. So the only things we don't use are really toxic stuff. Or, you know, things that you're not sure what they are might be a little dangerous to use. So we avoid those. But We reuse everything. So the rolled up styrofoam and the styrofoam that comes in that's been rolled by the ocean, that can't be displayed outdoors, but we've created bleached coral reefs out of those by sculpting that in. We just had a show at the Clinton Presidential Center that was two big exhibit halls, and that was also a real honor, and got to even meet Bill Clinton and have him talk about what we were doing. But we really try to use everything, and so that's kind of a great creative challenge. You have to figure out how to use everything and how to turn it all into something. Of course, if it's an outdoor sculpture, we have to make them weatherproof and windproof and all that. So it sort of drives the technique to be very tough. And so we wire and screw everything together.
Your work focuses so much on animals and how they're vulnerable to the effects of so much plastic out there and the climate change as well. Why did that hit home for you? Are you an animal lover?
Well, you know, I think we all are. You know, I think that When I first was trying to conceive what to do about this issue, I thought, I know about public art, and I know that I wanted to reach the general public. I wanted the people who don't go to art museums. I want the people who might be littering on the beach, or the people that never think about art or anything. And the one thing that everybody loves is animals, and also, the animals, I work hard to make the, I do all the heads of the animals, and I really work hard to get the eyes to reach into you and to kind of grab your heart and get expressions in these animals out of garbage. And I knew that, and it has actually worked really well. I mean, we reach kids and adults of all levels, all socioeconomic types. I mean, we've also displayed our work at Disney World and SeaWorld and those kind of places, and we're trying to reach all audiences, so we try to go everywhere, and that's pretty cool. And I think animals are one of those things everybody loves. It's you know, my background is not making animal art at all, and in fact, you know, my work is more abstract in some regards before I started this, and I thought that just doesn't work. The general public doesn't get abstract art as much as they would an animal. And to me, reaching the general public was why I went with animals.
And what is the planning process when you're, you know, thinking of creating a new sculpture?
Well, that's an interesting thing because, you know, at first it was, when I started this, it was really what are the materials and what are the right colors and, you know, all that. And also but now that we have quite an inventory of animals and environments, I'm looking, of course I have to look at the materials because we can't go out and buy something. We have to just accept whatever washes in. So we're always sorting things by color and size and shape. And when I see we have enough of a certain color, like for instance, we ended up having our pile of black kept getting really big, and I'm like, well, it's time to make a giant whale tail. No, we can't do a giant whale because it's too big for us to deal with. But you know, all of our sculptures are huge, and so the whale tails, we've now made two giant whale tails, and they each have a 15-foot fluke that comes down, and then the base is like 12 feet by 12 feet. So all of our sculptures are huge, too, and that's the other thing. In order to reach the public, you want something so big you can't ignore it, which means you also have to involve a lot of people when you're doing it, which is actually one of the joys of Washed Ashore to me, is that we involve the general public in the creating of the small parts and panels and trash kebabs, as we call them. So people can walk into our workshop in Bandon, and I invite everybody who's listening today to drive to Bandon. And you just walk in the door, and we have an ongoing workshop. You can just come in and sit down and start playing with all this stuff, and we tell you what animal we're working on. And right now, as a matter of fact, we are working on a California condor that will be a permanent piece at the Oregon Zoo. So if people get down to Bandon over the holidays, they can actually put their hands on, you know, making some feathers for the California condor and then be able to visit it on a regular basis at the Oregon Zoo.
You know, you worked with kids so much as an educator. What kind of response do you get from the children specifically when they see these sculptures?
Well, they get it right away. They really do. One of my favorite moments is when we started this, and we were at the Oregon Coast Aquarium back in 2011, and this little boy came running down the ramp there, and he goes, "Mom, Mom, look, it's just a bunch of wabash." And it was like, he just got it. It's just all garbage. And kids like, this isn't right. They understand that if this all came from the ocean, this isn't supposed to be in the ocean. This is wrong, and animals shouldn't be eating this, and animals shouldn't have to live with this. And, you know, and that, and oftentimes us adults wake up and start paying attention when our kids around us say, "You shouldn't be doing this, Mom and Dad. You need to recycle. You need to stop what you're doing. You need to do things differently." And I often find that, you know, kids will poke their parents to do the right direction. They also get things early on, and that's really important that we could teach them early so they don't have to change their habits. They just get the best habits to start with. I'm a real believer. I don't have art degrees. I have education degrees, and that's sort of my background that this comes from is very much education.
That's terrific. Now, when you're getting, as far as responses from adults out there, you said that sometimes the scientists, the people who actually study animals, have given you a lot of compliments, and it's not just the artists who like your work, it's also the scientists, right?
Yeah, that's actually my favorite group to compliment me, because like that, we work really hard to be respectful to the animals. So I made an 18-foot-long weedy sea dragon that I just love. The animals are an amazing creature. They look like Dr. Seuss created them. But I study the animals really carefully, and I make sure that, like, all the appendages are the right shape and size and placement, and the fins are in the right place, and they're, you know, all the anatomy as much as you can with garbage. I mean, you know, there's only so much you can do, but you know, I look really carefully at, you know, the everything. You know, like in the blue marlin, when I made that, I realized I was looking up closely at the eyes, and their pupils weren't exactly round on any of them, and they were, you know, iridescent. So I purposely made sure that was in there. I just feel like that is respectful to the animals, and it gives them a voice, and that kind of authenticity shines through and is appreciated.
Mm-hmm. You depend basically on an army of volunteers to collect all this trash. So if people do want to get involved with the Washed Ashore project, are you in need of more volunteers? And what could people do if they do want to get involved?
All the time. Well, we also are partners with Solve. So every time they have one of those big beach cleanups twice a year in September and March, you know, head to the beach and go get garbage off. And that stuff, we send trucks up and down the coast to pick that stuff up and bring it back to Washed Ashore down in Bandon. And then, you know, actually, we have had garbage mailed to us, but do make sure you wash it first, because the post office doesn't really like stinky things, as we don't either, but we are used to that. But and then just, you know, go to the Oregon Zoo exhibit and you know, bring your family and you know, come visit us in Bandon. And then, you know, go to our website, washedashore.org, and we have a list of all the other shows we have going on right now, out and about. We're kind of in between shows. We're about to put up a show down in Florida, and we have one in Vancouver, B.C. We have one right now in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So we're all over the country, too.
Wow, and I see that 14,000 hours have been contributed by your volunteers, which is really quite significant. So start to finish, how much time goes into each sculpture? I'm sure it varies with the size.
Yeah, it's pretty hard. It's pretty hard to say that. But each panel is like a 6x6 inch piece of hardware cloth that people drill holes and wire stitch on the plastic to. And each one of those takes about an hour. And I'd say some of these sculptures have thousands of those in them. And then, of course, it takes a while to do all the detail work, the artistic. I have a wonderful apprentice that works with me, and we have an art assistant as well to do some of the finish work and the things like that. But just washing the garbage and collecting it and preparing it and putting on workshops, We like to have at least 6 months to a year to create a sculpture, but we have whipped them out faster than that when we've had to. But it depends on the other thing, as it's funny, is that some colors are very hard to come by, so you have to collect them for years in order to get enough to make a sculpture with. Brown, for instance, we're collecting brown right now because we'd like to do an eagle. But if someone commissions us to do a sea lion, then the eagle will have to go on hold because we'd have to use the brown for the sea lion. So that's how we'd have to think.
So if people want to see Daisy the polar bear or some of your other works of art, they could see that. Actually, they can see Daisy right now during Zoo Lights at the zoo.
Yeah.
But I am also seeing that you have exhibits, as you mentioned, in the Tulsa Zoo in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Smithsonian National Museum of Natural History in Washington, D.C., and, of course, in Bandon, in which you have an exhibit going on Thursday
all
through Saturday, 12 to 5. People can come there. And you have volunteer workshops on Thursday through Saturdays. What do you teach in the volunteer workshops?
Well, we kind of set it up like stations, so see, people could just come in and like in one of the stations, you just sort plastics. It's all been washed, and you just help us sort it by color, and that helps educate you as to what's really going on and what's out there. Plus, it's kind of interesting, and then you also help us, in the stages of that. There's another one where another station where you can make some corals that we're making out of cut up buoys. Another station, we have two different stations for the condor that we're working on, the black feathers and the white feathers. And we're making a giant sea jelly right now, and you can help us tie things onto the frame, tie rope onto the frame, and make trash kebabs that basically strung plastics that we use for various things. So it changes all the time, but we're going to also be making another giant rockfish that we got a grant from Travel Oregon that we'll be working on that. That'll be a permanent piece down here in Bandon as well. And there's also a tufted puffin out on the bluff of Coquille Point in Bandon to enjoy as well.
So obviously the work of a lot of people go into each one of these sculptures. How does collaboration play into the creation of, new art pieces? Art is so often this solo endeavor. Was this sort of collaborative effort something you had always envisioned?
Yeah, it's, I kind of come from a little bit of a performing arts background too, and so I've always loved the collaboration part of things, but it's a tricky thing. When I first started, it's not something I've done, and not something a lot of visual artists do, is work with other people all the time, and you have to design things that they can do successfully, that they can do and still be creative with, but also will fit to the bigger picture. And when you're making something really huge, like a 16-foot-long parrotfish, you need to have a lot of little pieces all put that together. Or with Daisy the polar bear, all those fur pieces were all stitched together by volunteers. But to have it look effective, you have to have sort of a criteria. And that comes where my teaching comes in, where I set a criteria that this is what you need to have it look like, or this is sort of what we're going for, and then, get it all put together. And then, artists can come down and work with us for a while, and I sometimes when we do, my apprentice pretty much did a whole piece on his own, and I kind of collaborated with him, but he was the leader of it because he's really learning to get that. And so, it's tricky because you have to work with things that you can't go get more of if you want them. You have to accept whatever there is and however much there is and what it is. And and you have to work with lots of volunteers. And that's a challenge creatively. I love it. I love it. But it's not for everybody.
Well, we've loved having you here today with us. Thank you for joining us, Angela, here on KBOO.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Angela Hazelton-Potsey is an Oregon-based artist, and she's the founder of the Washed Ashore Project. You can see her sculptures made of trash collected along the ocean at the Oregon Zoo, and she's also had her work appear at the Smithsonian. And you can also go online to learn more about her and her work at washedashore.org. Thanks for listening to KBOO News In Depth.